Technology, it's such a big part of our lives. It can be fun, it can be convenient, just like this podcast, which is why University of Missouri Healthcare is proud to support podcasting on KBIA. Technology can also save your life. That's why so many people turn to University of Missouri Healthcare. Its hospitals and clinics offer you the latest technology, plus a medical team whose skill and knowledge are unparalleled. You know technology makes everyday life a lot better. Well, it's true for your healthcare, too. University of Missouri Healthcare, the care you deserve from the team you trust.
Hello, and welcome to Under the Microscope, KBIA's weekly look into stories in science, health, and technology. I'm Raymond Tungekar. This week, we'll hear from two MU researchers about their work into how a certain type of tree frog evolved. But first, a former engineer at the Callaway Nuclear Plant is requesting that the U.S. Nuclear Regulatory Commission, or NRC, look into possible violations of the operating license at the Callaway plant, owned and operated by Ameren, Missouri. KBIA's Janet Saidi has more.
Larry Crishone is an engineer who previously worked as a senior reactor operator at Ameren, Missouri's Callaway Nuclear Plant. He's filing a petition with an NRC petition review board asking them to look into possible violations in plant shutdown procedures. Crishone says the procedures are not in compliance with the plant's operating license and NRC regulations. Crishone's complaints about Ameren, Missouri date back to the year 2007. He feels at least one and possibly other shutdown events have been mishandled slightly and then covered up. In his petition to the NRC, Crishone says he doesn't believe public safety is at any immediate risk because of the alleged violations, but he feels it's the safety culture that's at risk. During a presentation Monday at the NRC's headquarters in Rockville, Maryland, Crishone said it's important for engineers to be able to raise concerns to Ameren management without risk of retaliation, and he says this isn't the case.
There are individuals in important positions within Ameren who consistently intimidate their technical staffs from raising embarrassing or inconvenient concerns. From your cubicles in Rockville, Maryland, you will never become aware of these problems unless a foolhardy utility worker brings them to your attention.
Crishone's concerns have to do with the plant's shutdown procedures and what are called tech specs, which he compares to speed limits. He says, kind of like speeding down a highway, the tech specs can be violated without endangering the public, but they still constitute a violation. Crishone says one Ameren senior reactor operator, identified as Mr. S in his petition, was intimidated by superiors to the point of withdrawing an operations report. In May 2010, as part of an investigative report, KBIA also spoke with an Ameren engineer who felt he'd been retaliated against for expressing concerns to his superiors. In his petition to the NRC, Crishone tied the importance of open communication about safety issues to the 2005 Tomsoc Reservoir collapse, which sent more than a billion gallons of water through the Johnson Shut-ins State Park.
Had Ameren not blatantly ignored the concerns of its technical staff regarding the level sensors at Tomsoc, that disaster would never have occurred. The events of this petition might seem like a trivial matter to you, and certainly compared to Tomsoc, they are. But they are indicative of an organization whose managers continue to place personal gains ahead of public safety and who are willing to retaliate against engineers and technicians who dare to stand in their way.
The NRC board that heard Crishone's petition Monday will now receive a publicly available transcript of the presentation before meeting again to decide whether to take any action. Ameren, Missouri officials, meanwhile, declined to comment on Crishone's petition, saying that until the petition has been acted on by the NRC, the company doesn't have any actual facts to comment on. Janet Saidi, KBIA News.
We're all familiar with evolution, but have you ever really thought about how new species form? I got to thinking about this after hearing about an MU study into how a certain type of tree frog came to be. And so I spoke to two of the researchers.
Yes, I'm Carl Gerhardt, Curator's Professor of Biology, University of Missouri, Columbia.
My name is Mitch Tucker. I'm a PhD candidate at the University of Missouri. I study the evolution of the acoustic communication of gray tree frogs, Hyla chrysocolis and Hyla versicolor.
So there's two frogs that they study. One's a pretty standard species, and the other,
the eastern gray tree frog,
has a little quirk. It has twice as many chromosomes as the normal frog. That's actually how it branched off and became a new species. And the thing is, there's no way to tell both frogs apart just by looking at them.
No, I mean, I think there's probably some people out there that, you know, they're like, yeah, I can tell my chrysocolis from my versicolor, but it's highly unlikely that you'd have any idea what species it is just by looking at it.
And the only real way to tell them apart is through their calls. The normal frog has a faster call, and the eastern gray is slower.
So the more chromosomes, the lower the trill rate.
great comparison is a fast-talking New Yorker compared to Southern Georgia drawl. Saying the same sentence, saying the same word, just the words come out of the mouth at a slower repetition.
And here's the question Tucker and Gerhardt wanted to find out. How was the Eastern Grey ever able to even survive as a species? Because organisms with different chromosome numbers normally can't reproduce. And if they do, they usually will produce sterile offspring. That means that when the earliest members of the Eastern Grey branched off and became a distinct species, it was absolutely necessary for their survival that individuals had a way to identify and mate exclusively with others that had the same number of chromosomes. Which brings us back to their call. Gerhardt wanted to find out whether an increase in chromosome number would automatically result in a different mating call. So, in an experiment done several years ago, he created a group of normal tree frogs with three chromosome sets, one more than they usually have. And what he discovered was that the speed of the male calls
decreased by about 12 to 14%, and that was in the direction of the Eastern Grey tree frog.
So the addition of an extra chromosome set made normal frogs sound more like their four-chromosomed cousins. But would female frogs respond to that new call?
So in here, we're in the anechoic testing chamber.
To find out, so Tucker took normal female frogs with an extra chromosome set.
Set it right in the middle of our two speakers.
And tested a series of artificial calls.
It totally sounds very artificial to human ear, but apparently the tree frogs don't mind.
Well, one was slower and sounded more like the calls of the Eastern Grey, while the other was faster and was closer to normal frogs. And what he discovered was that
not only was the repulse rate preference different, but it was different in the direction that it, quote-unquote, needed to be in order for them to stay as a species separate from their parents.
That was pretty exciting. We didn't know that they would change their preference, and we certainly didn't know that they would change it in the same direction as the males, and we didn't know that they would change it by about the same magnitude as we saw in the males. So those were surprises.
And that's the beauty of evolution. Now just imagine you're a female Eastern Grey lounging by a pond. Now, you're vastly outnumbered and surrounded by frogs of a closely related species, but if you mate with them, it would spell the death of your own. Now, what's amazing is that the event that started your own species, the doubling of your chromosome number, not only changed the calls of males, but also allows you to cut through all the noise and find a compatible mate, and gives your species a fighting chance at survival. And this whole process of chromosomes doubling, which is called polyploidy, Tucker says we might not be here without it.
A lot of people say that polyploidy isn't relevant and it's an evolutionary dead end and it doesn't contribute anything to the diversity of life. But if you look at our own history, we've gone through multiple, I think at least two rounds, possibly three or more rounds of polyploidy that, you know, it's evidently done well for us.
That's Under the Microscope this week. I'm Raymond Tungekar.